Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning, talking a little NFL. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. He'll be with us for the next 30 minutes. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this
awesome.
Morning?
Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, the Jonathan Taylor situation, which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
No trade to this point. As a Green Bay Packers fan, I found it interesting that apparently they were interested in Jonathan Taylor. But where do you think this all goes from here? And what did you make of no deal being reached with Jonathan Taylor by the Tuesday deadline?
Well, I was a little surprised that it came down to talking about two teams. I think, you know, there were other teams that made calls, but obviously, you know, the Packers and the Miami Dolphins were clearly the two teams that were more engaged than others. You know, you mentioned the Packers. I think it's interesting, you know, just talking to someone there, I think the Packers are really happy with where Jordan Love is at this stage. You know, I think there's some, you know, hopefulness in what they saw in the preseason, you know, played against a lot of second and third string players, but I think they felt like, okay, this is a positive track that he's on. But I think the Packers also look at the roster and said, okay, man, tight end, wide receiver, ton of youth here. You know, that's a little bit of a hitch in the development, just knowing that there's so much inexperience around Jordan Love. And I think that's what drove the Jonathan Taylor interest, the idea that you could bring in an elite level running back who could kind of help smooth out the process, give Jordan Love someone to lean on, you know, basically give him what he would want to give Anthony Richardson with the Colts. So I think, you know, that was part of why the Packers were involved. And then Miami, what running back has Miami not kicked the tires on over the last several months? They've looked at a multitude of running backs, and it made a lot of sense there. Obviously, we hear about the asking price, particularly with Miami and Jalen Waddle, plus other assets. Pretty steep asking price for the Indianapolis Colts, but shows you really what Chris Ballard and ownership wanted to get, especially ownership wanted to get out of Jonathan Taylor if they were going to trade him. It's interesting because you go back to the Christian McCaffrey trade with the 49ers. Remember, that's a guy who I think, honestly, if he stays healthy this year, from putting my eyes on him, it's probably the first time in a while I've looked at a running back and thought to myself, you know, this could be like an MVP candidate if this guy hits all the markers that he looks capable of hitting going into the season, stays healthy. That guy got dealt for a second, a third, a fourth, and a fifth, okay? Add it all up, it's basically first-round value for Christian McCaffrey. Jalen Waddle plus is more than first-round value. And that's what the Colts supposedly were looking for in this process was kind of first-round value. I think the talks with the Dolphins showed either they're asking for more or they wanted to load up their ask so they could turn back to Jonathan Taylor and say, hey, look, you know, here's what you think you're worth. We went through these talks. This is the value these teams assigned to you. Maybe you need to recalibrate where you're at contract-wise. And that's not really a way to get a deal done with Jonathan Taylor. So putting him on PUP is not a surprise to me. He's going to sit out for 4 weeks. I don't think he was taking a carry anyway. I think they knew that. And I think after 4 weeks, they're basically going to turn back to him and say, either you're on the field in week five or this is hold-in. We're going to consider suspending you. Or, you know, we're going to have to look again at trade talks leading up to the October 31st trade deadline. It's not going to a good place. I don't think the way that they've handled it has really been fruitful in terms of repairing the situation. But I also say this, I think Jonathan Taylor has played a role in this at this point. I think they don't believe he's hurt. I think they believe he can go out there and play. And you know, I think the two sides have both sort of had a hand in this impasse and the messiness that really they're both kind of dealing with in this situation. But I really don't – I would be stunned, I think, if Indianapolis ends up fielding him at any point this year. I'll tell you this, though. One team that I know made a call on him Had a chance to talk to their general manager. Was not the Dolphins or the Packers. That GM told me, he was like, I think they still get a deal done at some point, which was a little bit of a surprise to me that was still something that an outside source sort of gathered from their talk with the Colts.
I mean, they need to, but it's not going to be very good, right? I mean, it's not going to be great.
I mean, you know, okay, let's think about this for 1 second. When we look at Saquon, right, and how that deal got done, we look at Josh Jacobs, how that deal got done. Granted, those are just one-year deals, right? But if you look at where the franchise tag will be for them next year, right, if they remain with the Giants and Raiders, you're talking about a zone where you're in the $13 to $14 million range in terms of the 2024 salary. You know, I think if that's realistically sort of the APY now that we're looking at for running backs, and we're talking 3 years of guaranteed money, if you're talking $14 million a season and it's 3 years of guaranteed money, most teams everywhere will tell you, yeah, you know what, that's the ceiling. That's it. So if the Colts, if this is, if you're kicking and screaming over $10 million, $11 million a season, $12 million a season, and the difference is getting to 14, saying this is sort of, this is it. This is the attic of running backs now. That's how high you can go. Just get it done. Like, it makes no sense to argue over, you know, I would say $6 to $9 million in guaranteed money over 3 years, because we all know it's going to be 3 years of guaranteed money for running backs max. So if you're really arguing about, let's just call it $9 million. If you're arguing about $9 million over a three-year period and you're starting Anthony Richardson out of the gate, it's foolish for the Colts to be going down this road at this point. And I would pin that on Jim Mersay. And I guess Jonathan Taylor, if he's sitting there saying, well, it's got to be, rather than $14 million APY, it has to be 16 or 17. He's never going to get that anywhere in the NFL. That's a pipe dream. So, yeah, it's messy. It's unfortunate. And I can understand why Chris Ballard gets out there and says it sucks. He's right.
So another player with the team, I think this will get done, I would think. I mean, they're not going to screw this up, right? The Niners and Nick Bosa?
So this is interesting.
That was a deep sigh, Charles. I heard the sigh there.
I had a GM hit me up yesterday, and he said, are the Niners trade Nick Bosa? And I was like, not that I've known. You know, like, okay, that's an interesting question. So I hit up like a number of GMs that normally would be in those talks, right, especially in the AFC, because I don't think the Niners would ever deal Nick Bosa inside the NFC. So I basically hit up a bunch of AFC GMs, and I'm like, hey, are you hearing anything? What's the deal? All said the same thing, not hearing anything. I had one who said, you know, we kind of hearing rumors, but there was nothing, you know, tangible to it. So I reached out to the Nick Bosa camp, and I kind of said, what, you know, where are we at? Like, what's going on? Why am I getting GMs calling and asking me this question? This was before Kyle Shanahan addressed it yesterday, and we'll get to that. But I was basically told from Nick Bosa's crew that, you know, deal's not done, that there's clearly a lot of work still to be done. I wouldn't say that they were close to finishing it, but that they did not have any, in their mind, conception that he was going to be traded. But they clearly had those talks. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that inside Nick Bosa's circle, there were talks about, you know, is this going to ultimately end in a trade? That's interesting, because I never in my mind thought they would ever get there. Of course, you know, DeForest Buckner, that's why it gives me pause, because when they realized we're not going to get this done with DeForest Buckner, they did deal him. And now we're talking about different level players with Nick Bosa, defensive player of the year. I think they feel like he's right in the wheelhouse of, like, you know, he's probably in year two of 5 or 6 years of Aaron Donald-esque dominance, and they're not going to want to give him up. But the interesting thing is he's repped by WME, William Morris, whatever the William Morris Entertainment or whatever it is. WME, the co-founder of WME is Joel Siegel. Well, Joel Siegel was the agent for Khalil Mack when Khalil Mack got traded from the Raiders at a time when Khalil Mack was going to reset the market from a defensive perspective. So there is some background here. Now, Joel Siegel's not his agent. Brian Arault is. Brian Arault is the co-head of WME. Joel Siegel's the other co-head of WME. But they're both, they're there together, okay? You talk about those guys, there's no doubt those agents are talking every day, like, how do we handle this? How do we move forward? Kyle Shanahan came out and said, we are not trading, like Nick Bosa. He said this after I'd made all these calls, and then later in the afternoon, my NFL editor's like, oh, geez, Kyle addressed this. Everyone's saying no right now, but the deal was supposed to be done, okay? It was supposed to be done by now. It was supposed to be done a week ago. I think the Niners thought it was going to be done. Brian Arault's got to get this deal done not only with Bosa. He's got a Joe Burrow deal that he's got to get done with the Bengals that I've heard is not particularly close right now. So it's a lot on his plate. I think everybody's sort of surprised this isn't done at this stage. Nobody thinks Nick Bosa can be traded right now. Let's give it 10 days, and let's see where this is 10 days from now, because I never thought Khalil Mack could get traded from the Raiders at a time when he did, and then he reset the defensive player market when he signed his deal. I highly doubt Bosa can, but it's not great that they're at this stage and not finished right now. If something doesn't get done in the next, like, 7 to 10 days, it's pretty problematic, and, you know, I think other teams are really going to kick up this idea of, like, maybe let's give the Niners a call and see if there's any chance Nick Bosa could potentially be made available by the Niners.
Rand Carthon's familiar with Nick Bosa.
Yes, he is.
Hey, I'm
AFC. He's a GM of an AFC team, I'd like to point out.
I'm just telling you right now, like, there's no way he's getting traded inside the NFC, okay? Like, this isn't going to be the Niners sending Trey Lance to the Cowboys, okay? Like, they think a little bit more of Nick Bosa, and if that were to happen, he would definitely – it was funny because I was talking to an NFC GM, and he was like, just tell me he's going to AFC. He's like, he's definitely going to AFC, right? I was like, yeah, I don't think if that ever happened in their wildest dreams, he would end up in the AFC. I think they're adamant about not trading him, but I'm telling you, like, this is – the interesting thing about Brian Arault, too, you go back years and years ago when Aaron Donald had to do an extension with the Rams. It was Brian Arault and Todd France were both repping Aaron Donald at that time. The Rams are having a really hard time at the negotiating table with Brian Arault. And, you know, the deal did eventually get done with Aaron Donald, but, you know, it kind of got done by Todd France, not Brian Arault. And so, you know, it's just there's a lot of history there that you look at. And then, again, when you look at sort of the Khalil Mack, the past, you know, something did happen with someone else in WME. It's who got a big-time defensive player moved at a time when we didn't think it could happen. I'm not saying this is going to go down, but in the next 7 to 10 days, like, it's really important for that Nick Bosa deal to get finished off by the 49ers, because the teams are going to circle if that doesn't get done by the time the season kicks off.
It's really interesting stuff. We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, we also talked about the Trey Lance situation last week. He ends up with the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones pulling the trigger on that front. A lot of conversation around that with Dak Prescott this week. What did you make of the destination for Trey Lance and what that means for his future?
It's weird, honestly. It was a weird destination. I actually just wrote about this and, you know, talked to a number of teams about the deal after it was consummated. And it was one of those rare instances where I think other team leadership were looking at it the way a lot of us were, where they're just like, I'm basically like, hey, well, you know, like, what do you think of this? They're like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to make of it. I don't get it. Like, it's in terms of what Trey Lance needed, you know, I think it tweeted this, like, the consensus was this is a guy needed, like, a generous starting quarterback, needed an ability to go into a team and get reps, needed a fresh start, all these different things. But I think the reps was the really, really important part. As we talked about on the show, going all the way back to high school, you know, this is a guy that barely had 500, you know, passing attempts in an actual game, like a live game. And, you know, he's going to Dallas where, granted, I think he's going to have a generous quarterback. I think Dak Prescott, you know, what Dak said about, you know, welcoming him in and moving forward in the quarterback room is realistic. He's not getting the reps. Like, there's no way. I mean, he's not. And, you know, when you talk to other teams, what I thought was really interesting was the number of times you would hear people bring up, like, he's not just behind Dak. Like, he's behind Cooper Rush. Like, he's not getting reps over Cooper Rush. Like, he went from being a third quarterback in San Francisco on a good roster to being the third quarterback in Dallas and behind a second-string quarterback who, unlike Sam Darnold in San Francisco, has won meaningful games for the Cowboys. So he's really buried on the quarterback depth chart. So when you sit there and you go, okay, well, what's the upside here? All right, I ask teams, you know, like, weigh it out for me. Tell me what the upside is here. Well, the thought process is, probably not going to do anything in 2023 at all. Maybe in 2024, he makes Cooper Rush cuttable. Cooper Rush is on a two-year deal through 2024. And then at that point, he's the backup, and maybe Dak gets injured and Trey Lance ends up playing. The only way he'd get on the field in 2023 is just an insane rash of quarterback injuries. Either situation, not really good for Dallas. They're in a Super Bowl window. You don't want Trey Lance starting meaningful games for you right now. And so how does he really develop? No one knows. No one gets it. So the thought of, like, well, hey, maybe he develops enough or showcases enough in the preseason next year to you know, be attractive to a team. You trade him before you get out of camp next year, or he walks as a free agent and you get a compensatory pick. Man, that is a lot of drama to inject into your team. To go, well, maybe we take that fourth round pick, we turn to a third round pick. Like, it's just like, what are you doing? You know, Dak Prescott's getting asked about this. Mike McCarthy's getting asked about this. It's like, why weren't, you know, okay, Dak, you didn't get the heads up. Mike McCarthy, clearly you were not involved in this acquisition. So what was it? It was a Jerry Jones ego stroke. It was so Jerry could come out and say, well, you know, we had a second round grade on him and we spent a fourth round pick. And we had him in our second round on our board. Well, first off, why would you even say that? We all assumed he probably had a first-round grade on your board. So basically, you just told us it looks worse than we were probably assuming. Because up until that point, I just figured, probably got a first-round grade on this guy. And so that's the leap that you're making. No, Jerry says it was a second-round grade. And here's the rub. Please remember this, and I want fans to hear this and think about this when these trades go down. When a team tells you we had X grade on a guy, right, and now we just spent a later pick a couple years down the line on the guy to go and get him, he had that grade before he threw passes in the NFL.
Right. It's totally irrelevant.
Like, now you know what he looks like throwing a football in the NFL. So if you sit there and go, well, we had a second-round grade on him going into the draft, what the hell is your grade on him now, 2 years later, now that you've seen him throw in the league? Well, here, let me answer that for you. You just spent a fourth. No other team was willing to give up a fourth, which means he's no better than a fifth-round grade in the 2023 draft, okay? For a number of teams, once you see a player showcase their abilities on the NFL level, it dramatically impacts where they should be slotted in an NFL draft. So you didn't really win anything by giving up a fourth for a guy who you thought was worth a second rounder in 2021, because now you know he wasn't worth a second rounder in 2021.
We got a weekend tryout grade just below UDFA on him. Very excited about this deal.
It's crazy to me. So, look, of all the things, like, realistically, If like one team was like, you know what, Trey Lance, like, really, he needs to go wherever he can throw the football. Maybe it's not even in the NFL. He just needs to go somewhere where he can play at a decently high level of football, get on the field, throw a lot of passes, get a lot of reps, run an offense, be the leader in the quarterback room, all these different things, none of which he's going to get in Dallas. So we're going to spend the next 2 years staring at him in Dallas and going, what's really being accomplished here other than a bunch of drama, unless Dak Prescott completely falls apart or gets injured in the next 2 years. None of this really, I think, amounts to anything. And if he does, you know, like Dallas, that's like a panic situation. Like if you don't want Trey Lance leading your team in this window right now, you want Dak Prescott leading you in this window right now, A, because you're paying him, B, because you've built everything around him, C, because he's shaped the entirety of what that offense is, being there over the course of his entire career. So, like I said, weird.
Yeah, good old Jerry. So, Charles, we've talked about this before, but the Titans, the way NFL media at large views the Titans, I think sometimes maybe people miss some things on them because people don't like to watch them or pay attention to them. And I'm not going to ask you to comment on specific other media, which we did earlier on the show, but just let me ask you about just the view of the Titans and the view of the Jaguars right now. How do you view it? How do you think the NFL media views it? And is the obsession with the Jags, which I would call, I think people are a little too bullish on them. Do you think it's just because people think Trevor Lawrence is about to become that guy?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is the growth of Trevor Lawrence. I think it's part of the perception there is, you know, what we're never going to get out of our minds leading into the draft that Trevor Lawrence was going, he was this generational prospect who was, you know, only comes along every 10 or 20 years, whatever. And, you know, that he was going to be the next it guy in the NFL. And through the Urban Meyer period, we're like, oh my God, whoa, what's happened here? Like, this is a crash and burn situation. And then obviously you see, you know, Doug Peterson get in there, he turns it around and they go on their run last year. And so there's a lot of optimism about, okay, the ship's turning the right direction. We see growth from Trevor Lawrence. And then so what you end up doing is, as media members, we're all idiots when it comes to, like, forecasting the next season. We all forecast what? Growth. Like, oh, this was good. It's going to continue to be good. And the NFL goes, yeah, no, that's not how it works. You know, some stuff continues to be good, other stuff does not. And, you know, that's how we end up with teams we assume are going to be, you know, the next big jump or the growth team. And then it doesn't ultimately happen. And I think that's part of what plays into, you know, how the Jaguars are getting looked at. Now I want to be fair here too, though. It's not like Calvin Ridley is a good addition for that team. He really is. Now, you take the gambling stuff out of the equation. There were a number of teams that were calling the Falcons about acquiring Calvin Ridley, and they were calling with the mindset of making him their number one. So I think Ridley is, as long as, you know, nothing's really changed in terms of his talent level, as a bona fide number one. That's something they didn't have. You know, I think it makes Christian Kirk better. Travis Etienne, them drafting Tank Bigsby, who a lot of teams were telling me when the draft was over, like, hey, Bigsby's got a chance to, you know, eat a lot of you know, the backfield carries from Travis Etienne. That's how good he is. I think that makes them better because now you have a two running back set. And then, you know, there should be growth from having a season where they did turn it in the right direction. They did have there was a lot of progress made and, you know, the veterans should have learned a lot. And then, you know, you look at defensively, there's things to like, I think, about the Jaguars. But again, I told you, I sort of went through that. I discounted the Titans a little bit. I was like, you know, feels like a little bit of a rebuild. I don't know what to expect from Ryan Tannehill, all these different, they like offensive lines got issues. And then when I went there in camp, I'm like, ooh, this team is better than I thought. Like, it's, well, now when I really think about the defense, I put my eyes on the defense and I think about the depth chart defensively, has a chance to be a really good defensive team. Spears, I'd never seen him live. I told you, we're staying on the side. I'm like, man, that kid's got a gear. When you stand here and you see it in person, it kind of blows you away. And then what we saw offensively, what they were doing offensively, there were some interesting things where you're like, oh, that's right. They changed the OC and that has a chance to really turn things around inside the Titans a little bit that people aren't really familiar with outside of maybe Tennessee. So I think that's how that ends up happening. Maybe, you know, you just keep staring at Tannehill and going, how long does that guy have? And then you stare at Trevor Lawrence, you go, how long does that guy have before he blows up and it's, you know, becomes everything we thought he was? That colors it. And then I just, again, I don't think a lot of people respect Mike Vrabel's honestly probably one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL since he became a head coach. Like, it's amazing the job that he's done since he's been there. If he was probably in a market like Chicago or Philly or, you know, New York, people would never shut up about Mike Vrabel, right? But I do think that there's an element of, you know, Tennessee where people takes a while for guys to get their due. So it's a long answer. I do think the Jacksonville Jaguars have a chance to be pretty good. But I told you when I was there, I was like, man, I'd be nervous if I was one of these people in the offseason who was like, they're clearly going to win the division. It's not even going to be close. I'd be nervous after seeing the Titans. Now, the Titans got to stay healthy. Like, you guys explain this to me. Are they going to stay healthy? Are they going to, you know, what's the offensive line going to look like? Those are things that I worry about with Tennessee, but I think people are probably disrespecting Tennessee a little bit, and they're giving a little too much respect to Jacksonville with the assumption that a good finish last year is going to equate to a hot start this year. I don't know for you know that we know that for sure.
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, and Fitz coming on. We're excited. Fitz at Yahoo. Fitz on your podcast. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. So we're relaunching the podcast under a different format. It's going to be more of sort of what we do here. A lot of the news and nuggets and just sort of talking about what exactly is going on behind the scenes. So looking forward to that. And I've been in a point guard role for a while with the podcast. I've been dying to get away from it. I just want to be a shooting guard. Let me give it a shot, though. Let me jack it up.
That's right. Charles, we'll talk to you next week, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. We'll react to what Charles had to say there coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.